The Ninth Symphony, written by Ludwig van Beethoven, premiered in Vienna on May 7th of 1824. Most critics consider it his best work. It was years in the making, commissioned in 1817 by the Philharmonic Society of London, and portions of the Ninth emerge from earlier of Beethoven's works. The fourth and final movement of the symphony joins the orchestra with four soloists and a chorus of voices singing the Ode to Joy. That's a tune that we all recognize as Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee. The words of that ode were first written by Friedrich Schiller. At its debut, the composer received 5 standing ovations for that performance from an enthusiastic audience, including people tossing their hats into the air. Fortunately for Beethoven, those were responses he could see, because by the time his magnum opus debuted, Beethoven was very nearly completely deaf. In fact, he might have missed the ovations were it not for the quick thinking of one of his soloists. For the entire performance, Beethoven had stood at stage right, caught up in the concert he was hearing inside his own head, conducting his own tempos and dynamics, while the actual symphony conductor, Michael Umlauf, led the orchestra that was on stage. When the live performance ended, Beethoven was still in his own world, still conducting in his imagination. Contralto soloist Carolyn Unger approached him and turned him round to face the audience so he could receive their praise, so that he would not miss out on their joy, which in turn informed his own joy. American Benedictine nun Joan Chittister tells a story in one of her books about the kind of joy we can almost miss out on experiencing. There lived an aged holy man, a monastic, who kept mostly to himself and enjoyed a simple life, including the spiritual practice of fasting a couple of days a week. One day, 2 brothers went to visit the old man. It so happened that they came to visit on one of his fasting days. However, when he saw the brothers standing at his door, he welcomed them with joy and he said, "Fasting has its own reward, but if you eat for the sake of love, you satisfy 2 commandments, for you give up your own will and also fulfill the commandment to refresh others." I wonder, how often do we miss out on joy? The holy man might have seen these visitors as an inconvenience, interrupting his comfortable routine. He chose to see their arrival as a great joy, to change his plans and his attitude. Were it not for Caroline Unger, Beethoven might have missed out on seeing the joy his symphony brought to an audience. The prophet Isaiah's words, "Beg Israel to turn and open their eyes and to view their return from exile as a great joy." Israel saw their exile to Babylon as their punishment for straying far from the lives they were called to live in God. They had become greedy, failed in looking after the poor and the powerless. They had sought wisdom from kings instead of God, put their trust in armies instead of angels. Isaiah is just one of the prophets who details the list of transgressions against God. If we look long and hard at our own lives, our own choices, we see that we make many of the same mistakes Israel did. We sometimes fail to look after the poor and the powerless. Sometimes we mistrust government programs that provide for the poor, or resent our tax dollars being spent on them. Sometimes we ignore the opportunity to share what we have with the food pantry or the women's shelter. Sometimes we look away when the news stories about famine, war, natural disasters tug at our hearts. Sometimes our words and our actions break our relationships with family and friends. Sometimes we are unloving to those we love the most in the world. We could really beat ourselves up over the mistakes we make. And we could see a lot of ourselves in ancient Israel. Before we go too far down that road, though, let me remind you that Isaiah's words brought good news to the people. This God of ours who dwells on high, who is holy in ways beyond our understanding or ability, that God also dwells with us. I live also with the one who is contrite, lowly in spirit, to revive the spirit of the lowly, to revive the heart of the contrite, says our God. God who created us and loves us is not beyond our reach. God is loving and forgiving us. God is guiding and comforting and healing and restoring us. This is the good news we find in the birth of Jesus, Emmanuel. This is the joy God intends for us to see and to know. Joy from this good news is the theme of Mary's song when she's in the company of Elizabeth. Gospel writer tells us Mary said yes to God's angel messenger, but then we hear little about the months that follow her yes. She was betrothed, but not yet married. That's a dangerous time for a young woman to become pregnant in her time and place. That's considered a violation of the betrothal contract. We don't know why Mary's parents send her to Elizabeth, but it might be because they have trouble believing the tale Mary tells about her pregnancy. Now, those of you who were raised in the Roman Catholic tradition, you're going to tell me the Roman Catholic Church disagrees with what I just said? That's okay. I hear you. I know that that's what the Roman Catholic Church teaches. I'm saying, as a parent, I might have struggled with that story. It might be her parents don't want to face the questions from the neighbors that would certainly come as Mary's belly grew. Maybe Mary herself is beginning to feel the emotional weight of her own words. The visit to Elizabeth might have started off as an intended respite for Elizabeth, old in age in her pregnancy. But for Mary, it becomes something much more. It becomes an unexpected joy. Elizabeth greets her with a warm welcome, with uncanny discernment, with boundless joy. And maybe that helps Mary remember her own joy and how she first reacted to the angel's words. Maybe on the long journey to Elizabeth's home, Mary had begun writing her own ode to joy, which she now shares with Elizabeth. My soul magnifies the Lord. My spirit rejoices in God, my Savior, because the Mighty One extends mercy to his people, she says. God shakes up the norms of this world, restoring its original order. He lifts up the humble while humbling the powerful. He fills the hungry with good things while eschewing worldly wealth. He keeps his promise from old, watching over his people with mercy and love. Mary chooses to let joy fill her when the weight on her shoulders might very well overwhelm her. You know how sometimes a song gets in your head and it sticks with you and it becomes the song you sing every time you get discouraged, every time you're afraid? I wonder whether this Magnificat of Mary's might be the same song she sings every time she is troubled. The words on her lips between contractions in that dark stable. My soul magnifies the Lord. My spirit rejoices in God, my Savior. The gentle lullaby she sings to Jesus as she contemplates that surprising visit from the shepherds. God has remembered me, his humble servant. The hushed song that keeps fear at bay as Joseph leads the family to safety in Egypt when Herod's soldiers search for the child to kill him. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. The anxious words repeated as she and Joseph hunt for 12-year-old Jesus before finding him in the temple with the rabbis. God has performed mighty deeds with his arm, scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. The words she can barely voice as she stands weeping at the foot of her son's cross. God has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. The song she has trouble remembering through the long day and nights of grief following Jesus' death. God has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. The anthem she takes up anew on resurrection morning, first at the empty tomb and then every day thereafter in the temple courts, side by side with Jesus' disciples and followers. God has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful just as he promised to our ancestors. Mary's Magnificat sings of joy in spite of circumstance. It sings of expectation in spite of present reality. It is a song that declares, I believe, even when. Dare to believe. Dare to dream, to hope, and to trust that God is at work even now, lifting up the humble, feeding those who are hungry, showing mercy to all. Dare to give voice to that good news in your life. Dare to proclaim that good news in all that you do. My soul magnifies the Lord. My spirit rejoices in God my Savior. For God is merciful. Let that daring lead you into paths of unexpected joy. Remember to turn around and to keep your eyes open, because joy could be any place, and it could be every place. It could be a message for the whole world, and it could be a message just for you. But do not miss out on joy.